Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short.
Patriots Playbook.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome into the Playbook Thursday. And week 5 of the NFL season, Patriots Denver Broncos this Sunday afternoon, 4:25 Eastern Time kickoff here at Gillette Stadium. I'm John Rook. He's Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. We are soon to be joined in the playbook by Lindsey Jones, who covers the Broncos for the Denver Post, and also Russell S. Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com, in the 3 o'clock hour as well. In the meantime, on Thursday, it's time for you to tell us what you think will happen. So we need your predictions. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you get us here. Webradio@patriots.com via email. The ACE ticket hotline. And do it now because there won't be much time later. 508-298-0398. Area code 508-298-0398. Facebook is John.Rook. Twitter is @JRook0722. Some significant news today.
Yes.
In and around practice.
Yes. Regarding tight ends in particular. Aaron Hernandez, how you doing? Good to see you again. Back out there.
We missed you, buddy.
Yeah.
Where you been?
Well, we know where he's been, but he was out there running around in warm-up drills, had a noticeable hitch in his step, you know, isn't 100%, but is a lot closer to it than he was a week or two ago. And I think he's back at practice a little bit sooner than most people predicted.
There's no doubt that he's back sooner than we predicted.
Now, I wouldn't get your hopes up that he will play this weekend. In fact, I think he will be out again this weekend, especially based on what I saw today, the way he was moving around. But
was he kind of moving around gingerly?
Yeah, he was definitely had, like I said, he had like a little bit of a hitch in his mm-hmm. gait, mm-hmm. and he wasn't going full speed. Plus, it was, you know, you've seen the weather out here. It's been foggy and misty for the last 2 days straight.
Kind of raw.
It's a slick track out there on the grass.
Right.
So don't expect him to do a hell of a lot of that kind of stuff in these conditions. But next week's a possibility at Seattle. More likely maybe the Jets game at home. Who knows? Somewhere around there. But before the bye week, I predict he'll be on the field in game action for this team.
Okay.
Rob Gronkowski also returned. He missed yesterday with his hip problem. Michael Manawanui was mm-hmm. back out there as well, our favorite guy whose name to pronounce.
Right.
So, good stuff as far as that goes. Only 3 players not out there. Edelman, with the left hand, continues to be a mystery. Steve Gregory, who also has a hip. That's now 3 players on this team with hip injuries right now.
What would you think?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out where that might have come from.
I don't know if it's... Well, because it's happened when we've had, like, sort of bad weather. So I'm wondering if, you know, guys are, not that they're getting hit, but maybe they're slipping awkwardly, you know, or cutting, or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the body's going one way and the leg's going the other way, and, you know, it's the only thing I can think of, because they're not really doing full contact hitting really out there where you would get, you know, in that area, be getting a lot of, you know, impact, collisions.
Okay.
And Rozai Dowling, who...
He was somebody I was going to ask you about anyway. Do we know what his deal is?
I don't know what his deal is, other than when he's been out there playing, he's not looked good. And he was injury prone since high school, and now, you know, finally he was healthy this year, went through basically all of the summer.
And everybody's starting to, you know, jump on his bandwagon.
You know, he started at right corner, and has progressively moved down the depth chart to the point where he's barely registering on the game book as a participant.
You know, even last year when he was a rookie, I tried to back off a little bit because he was a rookie and because he was hurt, but you knew that I was banging on him last year.
Yeah.
I didn't like the pick.
Right.
I thought it was a silly pick, especially for a kid to be taken that high who didn't really show that he could stay on the field health-wise. Even in college at Virginia, and mm-hmm. that's kind of proven itself out now.
Yeah, unfortunately. So those 3 guys, not at the start of practice today. We'll see what their condition is by the end of the end of the afternoon here.
Where is Dante Hightower, you think?
Well, he's been practicing.
I know he's been practicing, but I know it's the hamstring
injury. Percentage-wise?
Yeah, I mean, are you just best guess here, based on what you saw, the little that you were able to see, do you think he'll be back in the starting lineup? Do you think he'll be back at full speed? Just a best guess.
Hamstrings are such a, we talked about this a little yesterday. They're such a tough call. He's been out there 2 days in a row now, so... The fact that they signed Bobby Carpenter tells me that he probably will be inactive.
That's what I think. Why else do you go to the length of signing Carpenter?
Unless they go with the rookie and keep Carpenter on the active list. If something happens, if he can't go, he's ready.
How does the list work out? Can they keep him without making a move?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to deactivate seven guys on game by 90 minutes before kickoff.
Okay.
So... Carpenter could be among the 46 who are active. And, you know, if Hightower starts and then can't go after a while, Carpenter's there to take his place.
Gotcha.
Or they just play it safe and say, you know what, it's not worth it for this week. But you would think a guy like Hightower, if he is able to go, this is a team you would need him against. This type of offense.
You would think, just because you'd need somebody with a physical presence that can plug the run and also some with
maybe get to the quarterback.
Some movability, yeah, right, to be able to get to the quarterback, force panning. I mean, I thought one of the keys that certainly stands out to me as we kind of roll into this thing here with the Broncos, but it's obviously a heck of a lot more than just, you know, Brady versus Manning, is I think the national media and those outside of our immediate area want to bill it just because you've got two future Hall of Famers at quarterback going at each other. Funny that they actually don't play against each other, but nevertheless, I understand why the hype is that it is for the game.
Mm-hmm.
This having been said, to me, the best way I think that you can be effective against a quarterback that clearly has the savvy that a guy like Peyton Manning has, because you're not going to fool him. He's seen everything you're going to throw at him. What you have to do is you have to be able to put at least a little bit of pressure on the guy to force him to make quicker decisions.
Yeah.
In other words, get rid of the ball before his receivers can make their breaks.
Yep.
Because if you allow him to get
timing,
rhythm
yeah.
and timing, he can and will pick you apart. I really saw something very good by Ron Jaworski on ESPN earlier today or during one of their morning sports centers, and I thought it was just absolute nail-on-head stuff. Rarely do I say this about football analysts, but I think Jaws is one of the best, and frankly, I don't know why he left the Monday Night Football booth. I think he's better than Gruden, but that's just me. I know why Gruden got the job, because there's a little bit more flash, and, you know, he's an ex-coach, and, you know, he goes a little bit off kilter. And but I think here's what I really liked about Jaws's, you know, breakdown of this whole thing. He showed why he thinks Peyton Manning is back at an elite level in the NFL by some standards, and this was our conversation yesterday. Does Manning belong as one of the top, as one of your top five quarterbacks in the league right now? And why I put him in there. Jaws also has him in there, and so I'll take that for what it's worth, because I respect Ron Jaworski greatly, even though I hated his guts as a quarterback. But I'm just saying, here's the thing. He showed several routes this past week against Oakland where, you know, it takes arm strength as well as accuracy in order to be able to make the throw.
Mm-hmm.
And he was throwing BBs, okay, or throwing darts, rather, shooting BBs. In other words, you know, I think that Oakland might have been a little soft, but at the same time, it looked like you have to have a certain amount of strength to be able to make certain throws. And he was able to do that. Sideline
out
routes,
patterns?
Yes.
That kind of thing?
Sideline out patterns.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be able to throw across your body. You're coming usually from the opposite side of the field, and you've got to put enough zip on the ball
to where the
defensive back can't make a break and pick it off.
It can't be a lob. It's
right.
Got to be
if it's a lob, you're dead. Yeah. It's a pick six the other way.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to do that. He was absolutely able to do that. So,
and that's what Jaws was.
That's what he was pointing
arguing.
Out. That's what he was pointing out, that he's back as well. And so, because of looking at some of that, I think that it's incumbent upon the Patriots to be able to force him to make early decisions. Let's see if we can jump into that a little bit more. As Lindsay Jones covers the Broncos for the Denver Post, she joins us now here in Patriots Playbook. Lindsay, it's John and Eric here in Foxborough. Thanks for taking the time today.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going. It's going. I don't know how much of the conversation just picked up there, but looking at what you've seen of Peyton Manning, how has his, I guess, improvement curve gone in your eyes? Is he back to where expectations are reasonable for him to being back at elite level in the NFL, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when we talk about quarterbacks here and Peyton Manning especially because, you know, we were on such a curve when it came to quarterbacks after last year with Tim Tebow and the expectations were, I mean, it didn't take much to look better as a quarterback than Tim Tebow was. But, you know, the expectations for Peyton Manning were really, really high. And he came in here and played really well at the start of camp, had some really nice days, which I think ratcheted things up a little bit. He played really well in the third preseason game, which, you know, everybody considers that to be the, you know, the true dress rehearsal. And then he played really well in week one. So they were kind of decisive, like, all right, he's fine, he's back, he can make every throw. And then week two happened, and he had that disastrous first quarter. I mean, as bad a first quarter as he can have. And it all came crashing back down and saying, oh, he can't make the throws, his arm is weak, all that stuff. And really the reality, I think, is kind of right in the middle. He's not 100% back. I don't know if he's ever going to be 100% back, you know, because he's getting older. No matter how much rehab and stuff he does, he can't take away the fact that he's, you know, 36 and a half years old and, you know, so long into his career. And he did come off that long layoff. But, you know, I think the reality is that he can make all the throws. Has he lost a little bit off his fastball? Yeah, he probably has. But when it comes to, you know, the big-time throws, he's still making them. And, you know, and then he's still also kind of learning about exactly what he can and can't do with both his, you know, the physical strengths and stuff that he has right now, and also with this team and the guys that he has around them. That's been the other part of this process that I think maybe sometimes gets overlooked in it, just focusing on exactly like what Peyton's arm looks like.
Sure. All right. So here's then a kind of a follow up to that, because it looks like he's progressing back. At least some of the thought was that as he begins to work his way back, it's going to take his teammates a chance to sort of catch up with him, because his schooling, his knowledge of the game is vast. That's why he is an elite, or has been an elite quarterback in the game, you know, for most of his career. Do you feel like now that the offense, the guys that he's throwing the ball to, catching the ball or handing the ball off to, or the guys blocking for him up front, do you feel like they're catching up to Peyton, to where they can all be on the same page once he's physically basically 100%?
Yeah, I mean, each week it kind of comes and goes. You know, 2 weeks ago against Houston, you know, Peyton threw a career-high incompletion, number of incompletions, 26 passes. A lot of those passes were dropped. Between Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas especially had the issues in that game. Last week against Oakland, I mean, they were almost flawless. I mean, the biggest issues they had in the game was the fact that Demaryius Thomas just flat out dropped a ball at the end of basically what looked like it was going to be a long touchdown. I mean, he had run 40 yards and he dropped the ball. You know, so that was obviously kind of a big gas, a big field goal issue. But in terms of, you know, throwing and catching, I mean, they were as in sync as any offense has been probably anywhere across the league this season. But I think Oakland's defense, like you guys talked about before I jumped on, was pretty soft. They had a lot of issues at cornerback. They kind of gave them a lot of room underneath, not a lot of tight coverage for their tight ends, and a lot of swing passes completed, those kind of things for the running backs. But yeah, I mean, I think we are seeing a lot of progress with that. But we're still seeing that he's going back to his security blankets. And when I say security blankets, I mean Brandon Stokely, and who's one of his closest friends, and Jacob Tammy, a guy that he played with in Indianapolis, and has more of a head start on these other guys in terms of knowing exactly where Peyton wants him to be and how he wants him to play. So it's really been those two young guys, and Decker and Thomas, that have had the most to learn and have had the biggest ups and downs. But those are also two guys that have the highest ceilings and the most room that they're going to be able to grow here with Peyton Manning, as opposed to what they were doing in this Broncos offense previously with their old quarterback.
Good points all.
Lindsay, all the Patriots this week are saying how the Denver offense is completely different now with Peyton, obviously, and it looks identical to the Indianapolis offense when he was there. Denver has historically been known as a very good rushing team. How much is the running game still part of this Denver attack?
Very much so, and I think that's kind of the one difference, how this offense is kind of built, as opposed to some of the teams that Peyton had to work with there in Indianapolis, where you know, in those later years, you know, they didn't have a very strong running game. I mean, I think the year they went to the Super Bowl, or their last Super Bowl with Peyton, they may have been 30th or 31st or 32nd in rushing. I mean, they were a bad rushing team. The Broncos are an average rushing team right now. I mean, they're not, you know, they're not rushing for 200 yards a game by any means, but Willis McGahee has two 100-yard performances in 4 weeks. I think he's got 3 touchdowns, and he's become a very steady and calming force in this offense, and sometimes there's some uncertainty about other things. He's, you know, I have a radio show this morning, we talked about it this morning, that if I had to pick an offensive MVP for the Broncos so far this season in first quarter, I would give it to Willis McGahee. I think he's been very underrated, running very well. I think he doesn't get a lot of credit for being as strong and as fast as he is because he's 30 years old. He'll be 31 here in a couple weeks. But he's been a very good back and a very nice piece with this offense, which is something that Dayton hasn't had in a while. But then, you know, it does look a lot like Indianapolis. They're using the tight ends a lot like Peyton used Dallas Clark for all those years. I mean, the Broncos have just about equaled their tight end output. They're one catch away from matching their season total from last year. So, you know, they really like doing that. But they're bringing some other things in there as well in terms of they're doing some two running back stuff. And then, obviously, like I said, relying really heavily on Willis McGahee.
Interesting. Lindsey Jones, again, covering the Broncos for the Denver Post, visiting with us here, the Patriots playbook. One of the matchups that I'm actually looking forward to the most is going to be right there in the interior, and it certainly stands to have a lot of intrigue between Dan Copeland, who's now going to, you know, snap the ball to Peyton Manning, and Vince Wilfork. They two used to face off in practice against each other in the adjacent practice fields here in Foxborough. Now they get to actually go against each other in game situation with Copeland moving in because of the injuries at center. What do you feel about Copen in terms of his value, and has it been spoken about amongst some of the players that he's playing with now in Denver, being able to step in and just bring his experience to the table?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, J.D. Walton, the player that Copen is replacing here, right. I mean, he took every single snap. I mean, he missed one snap in 2.5 years, and the one snap he missed was because his shoe came off. He hasn't missed a practice. He hasn't been limited even in a practice since they drafted him. So, you know, it was a really big loss for them, for JD to go down because he has spent so much time with Peyton Manning. And he's a real kind of physical, nasty kind of center, plays really well in the run game. I think the thing, they feel really fortunate that they were able to sign Dan Copeland a few weeks ago because they didn't really have much depth at center behind J.D. Walton at all. And they wanted to bring a guy in who was going to push J.D. because J.D. has really never been pushed at all for a starting job ever since he was drafted. So, you know, they really liked what Dan brought to that room, and they felt very fortunate that last week, I mean, they were able to slide him right in there at halftime, basically. And, you know, they didn't miss a beat. They went no huddle the first drive of the third quarter, so the first time that Dan was actually taking snaps. You know, I think there's a reason, though, that, you know, Copeland was available. You know, I think his age, I was talking to Greg Bedard, who I'm sure you guys know very well from the Boston Globe this morning, and he was kind of telling me what happened in training camp there and why Copeland didn't end up winning that job. And,
right.
You know, there's some physicality issues and maybe the way he plays against the run that he might be able to be exploited a little bit. But in terms of the experience factor, the stability that he's bringing to that line and kind of the comfort factor that they're having, that they don't have to start here with a completely inexperienced guy, they're really lucky to have him. And I think he's going to be an asset because he's played in that no-huddle system a lot. He's done that with Tom Brady, so he's really good at communicating. He's a good leader. He's got all the experience. And then obviously this week, I mean, he's bringing insight into the Patriots that nobody else has.
Sure. Defensively now, Lindsey, there's certainly some pieces to the puzzle in place. I mean, you've got Doomerville at one end. You've got the rookie Derek Wolfe at the other, who's certainly bringing a nice spark, maybe even more so than was originally thought he could. You've got a Pro Bowl player in Champ Bailey in the back. You've got Von Miller. All he was a defensive rookie of the year. So where does the defense need to continue its improvement to get to where they want to go?
Well, my biggest question about this defense is if they're going to be able to cover Rob Gronkowski. They weren't able to do it in 2 games last year, and especially when the Patriots were playing both Gronkowski and Hernandez, they really struggled. But what's kind of interesting to me about this game, besides the sexy quarterback matchup, is really to see how this Broncos defense is going to respond to the Patriots offense, because so much of what they did this offseason was really in response to what happened in those two games that they lost and were blown out in those games to the Patriots last year, especially that playoff game, that 45-10, where the Broncos were never competitive offensively or defensively in that game. So, you know, they changed their other starting quarterback. They've got two different starting safeties in this game than you guys saw back in January. One, because Brian Dawkins has retired for injuries, and another, you know, some other injury issues going on there. But they've got to find a way to match up better against teams that spread them out. And the Patriots spread them out better than anybody else did last year. So as much as, you know, I want to focus on the quarterbacks and we all want to talk about that, I really want to see if the Broncos can, you know, find a way to match up, to get to Brady. They had no pass rush against Brady last year. Von Miller's healthy now. He wasn't healthy in either of those two games in December and January, but, you know, he's developing. But this New England offense is really interesting to me with how well they've been running the ball, and they seem to be much more balanced even than the team the Broncos faced last year, which I think could be a big, big issue.
Yeah, that potential, I guess, could be somewhat scary for an opponent to have to see that. But frankly, like you, we're kind of curious about that.
Yeah, and I have a question for you, Lindsay, about two players in particular who I think could be keys on your defense there. John mentioned all of the big names there, but I'm interested in your thoughts on Joe Mays and Wesley Woodyard, because I think those two guys might have the skills to maybe disrupt a little bit of that balance that you were just talking about. What are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, well, Joe Mays is the Broncos middle linebacker who he didn't get to play last week against Oakland. I think everybody now around the NFL knows who Joe Mays is because the replay after replay after replay of his hit on Matt Schaub that looked really brutal, lost a piece of his earlobe when his helmet came off. You know, but he's probably the Broncos' best front seven run defender, but he's not great in pass coverage. And, you know, when he's on, he can make a lot of tackles. But he has had a couple of off games already this season where he just hasn't, maybe his tackling hasn't been as precise as he needs it to be. But they played really well without him last week against Oakland. And that was a week ago, that was the big concern is how are the Broncos stop McFadden without Joe Mays. They did great. Keith Brookings started at middle linebacker. So what I think they're going to do this week, I think Keith Brookings is actually going to end up starting and not Wesley Woodyard, but keep Wesley fresh and bring him in, you know, on the third down in their nickel package. They very much have a run defensive package and a pass defensive package. And problem with their linebackers is that they don't have very many three down excellent linebackers. They've got a lot of guys that are maybe okay against the pass, but not as good against the run, or vice versa. And that's where a team that's as diverse as the Patriots are, and with a quarterback that's as smart and experienced and as physically talented as Tom Brady is, can really get a defense in trouble.
Right, because so it sounds like the Broncos do a lot of subbing on defense, or at least try to, based on what they think the offense is going to call on that next play.
And absolutely.
Yeah.
They run their base and nickel. They've got a dime that they use a lot. And last week they were going to pack where they had seven defensive backs.
So
nobody down on the line, which was really crazy to see that.
So that could be an advantage for New England, because they tend to run a lot of run and pass formations with the same personnel, usually two tight ends, two wide receivers, and most of the time Stephen Ridley at running back, and they can either run or pass out of those formations depending on whether they bunch or spread out. So that could be a problematic for the Broncos defense, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking at and why I think that this game is really going to be, if the Broncos are able to win this game, I don't think it's going to be because of Peyton Manning. I think it's going to be because Jack Del Rio and this defense figure something out. But like that said, I still think it's going to be a huge test. I don't think there's a ton of people around, you know, outside of Dove Valley, the Broncos facility, that are really giving the Broncos a ton of chance in this game. It's kind of one of those, it'd be great to win, but if we lose, maybe we expected it kind of scenarios for this fan base right now.
Interesting. Let's add some emotion to that equation. Is there still any feeling at all, negative or otherwise, for Josh McDaniels?
Yeah, I mean, Josh is still a four-letter word.
Wow.
He doesn't get talked in favorable settings very much inside the building or around town. It's gone away a lot. I think when the Broncos were getting ready to play the Patriots in January, it was still really raw. I don't think people in New England kind of got the full sense of just how bad it was here when things really fell apart for the Broncos. I mean, just how bad it was when they were, I mean, they finished the Josh's second season 2-8. They were rapidly heading to, you know, a 3-win season, probably under Josh. They ended up winning 4 games that season after he got fired. But, I mean, it was, you took a team that was 8-8, Mike Shanahan's last year, and they were 4-12 2 seasons later with major disruptions with, I mean, trading away your quarterback, major issues with your best wide receiver, your best tight end. The personnel completely changed in a couple years. I mean, I think the one thing that people are now starting to kind of at least say favorable things about Josh is that his second draft, the 2010 draft class, with the exception of Tebow, who, you know, is his whole other, I mean, we could talk about Tebow for a 3-hour show some other time, but, you know, they did get Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, 2 starting offensive linemen. Obviously, you have to take J.D. Walton out right now, but the other picks in that draft are going to be guys that are hopefully going to be Broncos for a long time, be starters and very good players for a long time. So that's kind of the one thing that is a positive. But otherwise, I mean, people aren't really talking about Josh. I don't think you're going to see a ton of Broncos players out there giving him hugs before the game and high fives or any of that kind of stuff. It's kind of they don't really want to revisit that whole era.
And things started off so well with him. He had, what, 6 straight wins to start his career?
Yeah. I mean,
including 1 over these guys.
Right.
Yeah, which was probably the high point of the Josh McDaniels era, was that Week 5 win in 2009.
My last question for you, Lindsay. Honestly, who was the more entertaining quarterback to cover, Tebow or Manning?
Manning, I think, by far. I mean, Tebow was its whole own experience in a circus. But, you know, there's just something about watching Manning, the way he runs a practice. I'm sure you guys see that when you're out there watching Tom Brady, where you just know that you're watching something that's special. Mm. And he gives in, generally, he has interesting press conferences. I mean, you talk about football philosophy, football history. He's just been around and he's seen so much what, you know, what's going on with his family, you know, his brother, his father, all that kind of stuff. So as far as just from a purely football perspective, I don't think it's even close with Manning. I mean, Tebow was fun. I mean, the ride that Tebow took the Broncos on and the city on last year was unlike anything I'll probably ever experience in the rest of my career. But it was more of a circus than an actual football sporting kind of setting.
Well,
all right.
The circus is coming to town on Sunday.
My prediction is the circus is going to come back in week 6 or whenever it is that the Jets come here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, get ready for that.
Yeah, I think he's going to be this.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I think he's going to be starting for the Jets by that point.
I could see that. I wouldn't be surprised.
Lindsay, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Safe travels this way.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll see you this weekend.
You got it. Take care, Lindsay.
Lindsay Jones, Denver Post, joining us here inside the playbook. Some really good insight.
Yeah, she's a smart cookie. She covers the team very well.
Extremely well.
Yep. For a while.
Very, very impressive. I have to admit, I like the fact that, you know, there might still be a little bit of an edge to some of the Broncos, kind of show, you know, Josh McDaniels a thing or two, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I also like the fact, and I thought it was a very poignant point, she doesn't think that it's really going to come down to Peyton Manning if the Broncos are going to win this game. It's going to be how well the defense can figure out a way to slow down the Patriots.
Yeah, well, if they do that much if they rely on substituting as much as she says,
then you know the Patriots are going to go no-huddle.
Oh, that's a huge advantage.
Oh, yeah, the Patriots will go no-huddle all the time and not allow the Broncos to sub at all.
Right, no-huddle. Yeah, no-huddle, and maybe you now see a lot more running out of the shotgun because we haven't been seeing that. When they've gone shotgun, it's been predominantly pass, but If they're in pass mode on defense and you go no huddle, run the ball.
I can see that.
You know, and give it 4, 5, 6 straight times, as many as you can, you know, as long as it works.
I can see that. All right, Eustace has been hanging on for a while now, and he's in Toronto, Canada. I wanted to make sure that he got on the air here with us. Eustace, you're in the playbook. Thanks for hanging on.
Thanks for listening. I have a comment about two corners for the Broncos.
Okay.
Porter and Bailey. I don't know how the Patriots are gonna succeed against them. I know the offense is gonna roll, but I don't think they're gonna succeed against those two in particular. I think they're gonna have to run the ball like they did against the Bills, but in order to get those looks that they want. But I don't know if Lloyd and Welker are going to be as effective.
Well, what leads you to think that?
Well, because Porter and Bailey are they're probably the best tandem of corners in the league.
Well, you know, let's see. I mean, I can understand at least looking at it on paper why you might think that. But let's put it this way. While I think Champ Bailey is still very, very good, he's also kind of getting long in the tooth for a cornerback, number one. Number two, I would also allow that the Patriots have so many weapons, it's going to be very, very difficult for Denver to guard one of them, much less all of them, and they did, you know, kind of torch him for 45 last year in the playoffs. I realize it's a different look, it's a different defensive coordinator, but it's still a lot of the same personnel. So unless the Patriots do what they did kind of in the first half against Buffalo, and that is shoot themselves in the foot, they're going to be able to move the ball on Denver.
And one other point, too, it's not like Brandon Lloyd, who's going to be going up against Champ Bailey probably the whole game, is very familiar, having faced him in practice however many times when he was with the Broncos.
I'm sure that there will be some familiarity there. But
on both sides, but, obviously.
Yes,
but
right.
That's certainly more of an advantage than he would have against, say, a Darrelle Revis, who he doesn't face, you know, day in and day out.
Yeah, you just got to keep in mind, Lloyd is going to know what's coming as opposed to, you know, not knowing what would be coming against another elite corner. That also same goes for Champ Bailey. If he does face up, and it would be my anticipation that would probably be a likely matchup, even if it's a wash, okay, that's just one guy. You're not going to designate another guy, you know, to him. If they do, that's a huge mistake on Denver's part. That's going to leave somebody else open. This is where I think, you know, Gronk, who obviously has had great success in the past against Denver, this is where Welker comes into play. Deion Branch could even come into play in this particular instance.
Mm-hmm.
You follow?
Yeah. But I think I also think that I don't know, the DJ Moore, the safety, is outstanding. I think he, if he's one on one with, even though Gronk's been a great tight end, I think he will do a better than.
I don't think there's uses. I don't think there's anybody in the NFL that can go one on one with Rob Gronkowski.
That would be the first time if it happens.
Okay,
I'm not. No, I wouldn't put money on it.
You're not going to stop him one on one unless you had somebody 6 foot six out there. That then you might be able to, but you don't. You don't have that
6'6" who can run.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to happen.
If that pass rush gets going for the Broncos, and Brady gets rushed, I think maybe.
Well, that's the big question. That's the huge key for Denver to have success. Just like we said earlier, for the Patriots to be able to put something in Manning's sock, they have to make him throw early. Conversely, for Denver to have a chance in this game on Sunday, they've got to rush Tom Brady before Brady can set and find his second and third targets. And if they can do that, Denver will have some success. But that's the big X factor. And you just heard the Denver Post, the beat writers say, that's what they're all wondering. They're not sure they can even do that.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
Eustace, thanks for the phone call, and thanks for hanging on. Appreciate that. Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-298-0398 if you want to get your 2 cents worth in on the matchup. We need some predictions, folks. What, are we getting fat and sassy again around here? Nobody's offering up a prediction. Are we getting back to the way it was before the Arizona game?
And he's fat.
Well, maybe they're rethinking after what you know, we heard from Lindsey Jones.
I mean,
maybe
I don't
reevaluate.
I don't know, but I need to hear something from somebody here. I mean, is it just complacent city here? We know what happened the last time this place got complacent.
Mm-hmm.
You got beat.
Week two.
You got beat, big time.
Mm-hmm.
So get up off the floor and let's do it. 508-298-0398. The email address is webradio@patriots.com. Those of you listening in or following along on Facebook, come on, throw the post out there, or do the little the chat function there. John.Rook. You can also send the tweet to @jrook0722. Let me see. I think somebody just came up. Oh yeah, here we go. Morgan says Broncos draw first blood, but falls behind the Pats with 21-17 at the half. Peyton throws one interception, is sacked twice. Final score will be Pats 31, Broncos 27.
That's not a bad score. That's pretty close to what I'm thinking.
You think it'll be right there?
Close. Maybe even a little higher scoring.
On Facebook, Brian says, I predict that this is the week the Broncos chemistry comes together.
Oh, boy.
But Brady hits the underneath routes until the Broncos tap out. Patriots 38, Broncos 31.
That's a little bit more in line with what I'm thinking, but still a little too wide a margin.
You think so?
Yeah.
Margin 6.5, right?
Yeah, yeah.
6.5.
Broncos will cover, I believe.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Don't worry, I'll give you a final score before we leave.
You're going to give me a final score?
Yeah, I will. I won't leave you hanging.
Okay. Let's go with Ryan. He says 38-24. Pats win, baby. That might be a little high for me.
Yeah.
Just a little bit high.
The margin or the amount of points?
The margin. And even the points for that matter. Michael says, the game against the Broncos will be like almost all games involving Peyton and Tom. It'll be a nail-biter. Pats will have a lead going into the fourth quarter. Peyton will engineer a comeback that scares us. Broncos will need a touchdown to win the game. They will not be able to have Matt Prater make a kick. Prater's a great kicker, but this game is going to come down to a Hail Mary, and Peyton won't be able to make the throw all the way to the end zone. And the Pats, unlike Green Bay, won't try for an interception.
Oh, Lord.
The Pats' defense will bat the ball down to the ground, and the Pats win 34-27. And then he also says, Eli would make the plays Peyton can't.
Oh, I see. I see what he did there.
Yeah.
I see what he did there.
I know.
Hey, you know, it just dawned on me. We were remiss in not asking Lindsey Jones about this report that Peyton Manning is now going to be a part owner of the Memphis Grizzlies.
Really?
I had not seen that. I saw it before, and I meant to ask her, and it totally slipped my mind. But, yeah, it was just this afternoon that news came down that he's going to buy a stake in the NBA franchise.
Interesting. I guess he's going to have something to do with his money and invest it, right?
Keeping it in Tennessee, where he went to college.
I can understand that, I think, to an extent, sure.
But I'm a little surprised that he's going NBA route.
Well, I don't know that he could do NFL, because that might be a conflict of interest, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe not right now, but like maybe...
You mean when he gets out?
Yeah, yeah. Why just wait? Why not just wait until...
Well, because the opportunity presents itself, and sometimes people do have the sort of the carpe diem attitude where that's concerned, you know?
Maybe.
Good investment opportunity presents itself. You don't want to pass on it.
I don't know what the details of it are, but that's...
Well, maybe they're hoping the Grizzlies get sold, and then he cashes in.
They're trying to do like a Magic Johnson thing where
maybe
they just get a celebrity.
Maybe. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Johnson's becoming the face of the Dodgers.
Sure.
Do they want Peyton Manning to be the face of the Grizzlies?
Yeah.
Interesting. I wished I'd known that. We'd have asked as well.
I totally spaced on it. My bad.
Yeah, that's all right. By the way, we did find out where Rosy Dowling was.
Well, according to our friend Jeff Howe of the Boston Herald, Dowling's grandmother passed away, and he's home with the family dealing with that.
That would explain why we haven't really heard anything, one way or the other, being a personal matter. So certainly our best wishes to Dowling and his family in a tough time for them. But let's, you know, as a matter of business is concerned, it really couldn't have come at a worse time. You can't control things like this, but here's a young guy that needs to be on the field and needs to be around as much as possible.
Yeah, the only, I don't want to say bright side or positive, but if you're just looking at it from a pure football standpoint, it's not like he's been your starting, reliable contributor all season. He's barely played. So, from a personal standpoint, yeah, it hurts him not to be out there on the field. But from a team standpoint, it probably doesn't impact them all that much if he's not out there.
Yeah. No, yeah, right. Not at this point in time.
Not
right?
in practice,
no,
right. at least. I mean, he'll right. probably. I would right. assume he'll be available for the game because that's a few days away still.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he hasn't been, you know, a key component, so I don't know how much his absence will impact what they do game plan-wise.
Here's Melvin in Tennessee. Melvin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good, Melvin.
Okay, the interesting thing I think about this game coming up would be the Patriots' second opportunity at one of the more the better quarterbacks. So I want to see how they match up with that, and particularly – I guess Brandon Spikes for the safeties. I mean, he's excellent in run coverage, but his ability to cover the pass with the tight end, and I guess it'll be Arrington and Stokley. I think that matchup would be interesting because I think on third down when Peyton Manning, you know, when he's sweating bullets a little bit, he wants to go to one of those two. He rather wants to go to Tammy or Stokley in the slot. So if we can shut down that or possibly get a pass rush, if we shut down that, I think we'll be in a better situation towards the end to come out with the win. So it'll be a real interesting this weekend to see if we can, you know, get a better outcome when a lot of people are going to be paying attention to this game and show that we've greatly improved on defense, you know.
Okay.
So that's just my my quick thought about it. But,
okay. What do you think about the game then in particular? Pick it.
The score, I'll say about 31-28. I think it'll come down to like a last second field. I think Gattiscasco will kind of get back going in the right direction, hopefully.
Melvin,
but I think it'll be a high scoring game.
John can vouch for me here. I told him that in the break before we went on the air today.
That's exactly what Eric said.
Not that score, but that same scenario. Gostkowski wins it on a field goal. You're in the neighborhood with the score though.
I think so. I think it'll be a high scoring 20.
Yeah.
Upper 20s, lower 30s.
30s.
Game. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
That's all, guys. Huh?
All right. Appreciate it, Melvin. Thanks.
All right.
Taking the drop.
Yeah.
Melvin's taking the drop.
He is. Maybe we got the studio bugged.
He's getting close. He's absolutely getting after it. Sean in Vancouver, British Columbia says, we were talking about Rossi Dowling, and he says, Dowling looked good in the preseason but hasn't played more than special teams, even though there have been opportunities due to poor play and short injuries. Why really hasn't he been in there?
Yeah,
maybe he was still
question.
Working through an injury that didn't keep him out of practice.
If he was dealing with an injury, that's tricky. I really think if he were injured, I think he would have been listed somehow. Even if it was, because full participation is a listing in practice on the injury reports.
Mm-hmm.
You can have an injury and have full participation. So if he was dealing with something, I think they would have had to list him. I just think he's been underperforming.
That's kind of what I think. It could be an injury. We don't really know. He's not listed, though.
And that just tells me that it's not injury-related. It's performance-related.
Sean from New Hampshire says we need to get Dennard playing because corner is our weakness, and we need a major upgrade in there.
Well, good news in that department. He was taken off the injury report this week with the hamstring that he's been dealing with since camp. So that's a very good sign. They've managed him pretty well, I think. Kind of like, well, they might have rushed Shane Vereen back a little bit last year.
They clearly see something in him. Otherwise,
sure.
They wouldn't have kept him around.
Well, I mean, this is a guy who was probably going to be taken second or third round at the latest. Very
had
latest.
Had he not had the character thing going on.
Yeah,
right?
The week before the draft, he gets into the fight at the bar and hits the policeman and all that. And his stock dropped, and they scooped him up in the seventh. So clearly he was a guy who was going to make the team.
Right.
And the hamstring, I think, has really affected his playing time. It would have been really interesting to see how his availability might have altered the rotation at not only starting corners, but also the nickel and dime spot.
Okay. By the way, Sean also says congrats to Chandler Jones. Very,
yes.
Very nice.
Yes.
For those that did not know, he was named the AFC rookie.
No.
No, the NFL.
NFL
rookie
defensive
of the
rookie
month.
Of the month.
Defensive rookie of the month for
RG3
September.
RG3 was offensive rookie of the month.
And he was the defensive rookie of the month for September.
Off the top of my head, four starts in four games for Chandler Jones, 17 tackles, 9 solo, 3 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. Well-deserved honors. That's a good start to your career.
Better than advertised?
Better
than initially thought it might be?
Better than expected at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think down the line people were hoping that he would become that. He's become that a lot sooner, at least in my mind. And it's good. It's a pleasant surprise. He's become a key player on this defense.
What we have noticed is that
while
he has the ability to, you know, take on some of the, you know, solid, you know, tackles in the game that he has already had to face, but now we're starting to see him get the ultimate compliment where there's some doubling down
mm-hmm.
on him. You know,
mm-hmm.
we've seen that over the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. And Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator, is trying to counter that by moving him around, making him do different things, not always sending him to the quarterback, dropping him a little bit. Rotating what side he's on, putting him standing up, hand on the ground. Good stuff. I mean, the fact that he's able to, they're able to do that with him means that he's picking up this defense and his role in it.
Here's one from Rich in Roslyn Heights, New York, who just asked a simple question. Do you think the Patriots should sign Plaxico Burress?
No.
I'm not really sure what he would bring to the equation right now.
No, I don't.
I'm not entirely certain he'd bring anything. unless you got into an injury situation. And but then again,
you'd have to really, you would really have to be desperate for me to want to go after someone like that.
I would think so. Did
Jabari Gaffney?
Did Dante Stallworth sign with anyone? He did, didn't he?
I don't believe so.
Gaffney's with the Dolphins. We know that happened this week.
I think Stallworth's still available. I believe he's still available.
That would be the first option. To me, anyway, if the Patriots needed a wideout, if Stallworth is still available, that's probably where they'd look. Don't you think?
Yeah, that's yeah.
I mean, stands to reason, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Luckily, they're not in that predicament right now. It's the tight ends that need to stay healthy.
Burris did come for a workout.
That was reported, yeah. Mm-hmm. By several people.
It was about a month ago, wasn't it? Right
the
first of the season?
Oh, yeah. It was the beginning of the year.
Yeah. So, they did get a workout with him, and they did get a look at him, and I'm sure they've kind of, I don't think they've effed and effed it, filed it and forget it, but forgot it.
Well, I thought you were going a little profane on me there, John.
No, F and F, file and forget.
Oh, okay.
Come on, you don't know that term?
No.
Okay. Well, see, I taught you something today.
Yeah.
By the way, where's our word of the day? We used to,
oh my God.
We did this.
That's right.
All last year, we did a word
that's
of the day.
That's true.
We wanted to try to increase our overall.
Yes.
I was
trying to edify our audience.
Yes, we wanted to increase our educational acumen.
Your vocabulary.
On this program. And we don't have it anymore.
Wow.
Well, here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
I like how he accentuates word. It's like such an effort to get it out.
Of the day.
I'll give you a word of the day, John.
Good.
Okay?
Go.
Given the weather that we've had the last couple of days, the fog, it's very London-like out there.
Mm-hmm.
Foggy, misty, it's wet, damp. I'm going to give you this word to try to maybe boost your spirits a little bit. Heliolatris.
Heliolatris?
Heliolatris.
Okay, explain, Lucy.
Sun, love it. Helio,
okay,
the Greek sun.
Right.
Latris.
Lateral?
Well, heliocentric is also a similar word there, but just focused on or loving the sun.
Loving the sun?
Yeah.
Heliolatris.
Mm-hmm.
Means if you're heliolatris, you love the sun.
Yeah.
Okay.
You love to bake out in the sun. Yeah.
Stuff can bring cancer spots.
Yeah, well,
watch out for that stuff, man.
Be, I can't sunscreen.
Can't do that at my age anymore.
Don't sit out there between 10 and 2.
Worshipped the sun about 30 years ago, and now I'm paying for it. Just as an aside for those of you, younger kids out there who love to bake, just be careful.
Oh, that's not a leather jacket you're wearing?
Yeah, it's not quite that bad. Got spots all over me here, Now, hey, it is what it is. It is what it is. All right, very good. We have to bring this back now.
Okay, all right.
Are we going to bring it back on Wednesdays or Thursdays? What's a good day
for
this?
Why not both days?
Yeah, we have to do both days, right?
I mean, I got plenty of words to give you.
Oh, that's what I'm loving to hear. Okay, so we have to have a Wednesday and a Thursday word of the day.
Sure.
Okay. Excellent. Starting again. So we just started today. And by the way, I would be very interested if our listeners would offer words of the day that we could also consider
absolutely.
As part of the program.
Yeah, it's not a one-way street here. Throw some stuff out there. You never know. I might not know one or two words.
Nice. All right, Joe in Michigan says, John and Eric, it's Thursday, so time for predictions. That's what we've been waiting for, Joe. Where you been? Last week, I predicted a big win for the Patriots over the Bills. We ended up getting a comeback win, a blowout, both in one game. I don't think you were saying that about 5 minutes deep in the third quarter there, buddy boy. On to the Broncos game now, though, and I'm going with Patriots 38, Broncos 28. I believe the offense has found its stride. Brady will throw 3 touchdowns, 1 to Gronk, 2 to Lloyd. Cue the soundbite.
No.
Cue the soundbite.
No, not yet.
Lloyd!
Oh, boy. Okay.
He was working on
struggling
something there. I know. He's working. I got to give him some credit. He's doing something else. He's not paying attention here. Ridley will rush in a touchdown. There will be either a defensive or special teams score. Gostkowski adds a field goal to give the team a 10-point win. The game remains close until the final minutes with the Patriots winning by 3, but then they force a costly turnover from the Broncos and score a late touchdown. Hope to hear your guys' thoughts. You know what I really appreciate before we get to your thoughts on
the
his
detail?
Prediction? Yes.
Yeah.
I really get into when we get our predictions
on Thursdays.
He's a mystic
over here. He's trying to be a
I get into,
soothsayer.
I love the fact that people take the time
sure.
to predict how it's going to break down. I love that. That's great stuff.
If you have a vision, you got to
go with it.
Right. You have to articulate it.
I love it. It's very descriptive. We get some very descriptive predictions.
The here, more, so the better.
Love it. Absolutely.
The more, the better.
Now, what do you think of Joe's thoughts?
I think the margin of victory is a little too big for my liking this week. I think it's going to be a back and forth, typical Manning Brady type of game, with some weirdness. Some weirdness in the scoring. There might be safeties involved. There might be missed kicks, extra points. You know, failed conversions, that kind of thing, which gets us to a score of 32-32 late, last minute, last team with the ball, Patriots, Stephen Gostkowski kicks a game winner
ooh,
in the 40-yard range and wins it 35-32 for New England.
35-32 New England. And Gostkowski boots it through.
From the 40-yard range, the only range from which he has missed this year.
Well, obviously, then, if he's kicking a field goal to win it with 35 points, then he's kicked some others in the game previous.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's going to be weirdness with safeties and missed kicks or missed extra points from both sides. There's going to be some oddities with the scoring.
Big E says weirdness then on
mm-hmm.
Sunday. My prediction is going to go a little bit lower.
Okay.
For some reason or another, I've had defense on the mind here. I do think that... at least for a time, for a spell, until they're able to work it out, the Denver will is going to throw something out at Tom Brady. I like John Fox's ability to be able to conjure. And, you know, he did that as head coach of the Carolina Panthers. I thought that Carolina played the Patriots a great game in the Super Bowl years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always liked John Fox as a coach.
It ended up being a high-scoring game.
It ended up being a high-scoring game, but just something about it, I don't know why, kind of like your weirdness.
And there was weirdness in that game.
Kind of like your weirdness factor. I think they figure out a way to slow it down, but I also believe the Patriots defensively mm-hmm. will be able to at least contain Peyton Manning, probably force a couple of turnovers that will end up being the difference of the game. I'm saying Patriots 27. Broncos 20.
Oh, so they cover. They win and cover.
I say they're going to cover it. Barely. It's a 6.5-point spread. I think they're going to barely get there, but I think they're going to get there.
All right.
All right. One more here.
Sure.
Axel says, John, Eric, and Kevin in the boot. My prediction is Broncos 24, Patriots 31.
Oh.
See, I like how Axel did
yeah,
that. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah. Button hooked us.
Yes. While Peyton will play well, Brady will outshine him. Ridley will have another big game. The defense is going to beat most of the day, but will come up with timely stops as always, and Chandler will sack his first future Hall of Fame quarterback. And then he says, I have a question. Can you guys teach me the language when it comes to picking games like over and under? I've been listening to both PFW and Patriots Playbook for a couple of years. I never understood that.
Over and under?
Yes, what the over under means.
Okay, well, in that case, we don't normally do over-unders,
no,
do we?
No.
Over-under refers to the there's a number that's given by Vegas usually for the number of points that will be scored in a game.
Right.
Let's say it's 40 is the number. Do you think there will be more than 40 total points scored or fewer than 40 total points scored?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think more, you take the over mm-hmm. on that number.
Mm-hmm.
If you think fewer, you take the under. We don't normally do that in our picks, but
not usually.
We go with the point spread.
Well, but the phrase over under is mentioned a lot.
Yeah,
even
usually
if you don't
it
pick
is, right.
it, and so
right.
he simply wants to know what that means.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're either going to go over the point spread, or
right.
you're going to choose under the point spread. Right.
Right? Yes. Okay. Exactly.
And then of course there's usually a number of points that is associated with a particular game when you're predicting,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times you either choose they'll score over that point total or choose under that point total.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really a couple of different over-unders that you can play.
Right.
That would be, for instance, what's the over-under on the Patriot-Bronco game? Do you happen to know?
No, I don't.
I'm going to guess it's probably somewhere around 50. That's what I'm going to
yeah.
guess. Okay,
so,
and that means combined points for both teams.
Yeah,
do you
I'm taking
think
the over.
Do you think they'll score more than 50? You take
yeah.
the over.
Right.
If you think they're scoring under 50, you're going to take the under. So
right.
that's another way you can go over-under.
Right.
It's probably 50, 51, somewhere in there, I think.
Yeah, I still go with the over.
That means that I'd be taking under. If I'm going
27-20, yeah.
That's 47, I'd
yeah.
be taking under
okay.
on that particular
yeah.
instance, right?
Right.
Okay. Hope that answers your question, Axel. Now go place a good bet, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Big E, we'll see you here on Sunday, right?
That's right. 4:25 kickoff, the weird time.
The weird sir time.
So, yeah, a little bit later start to the day, but give us a little time to get going.
It's all good. It's all good. We'll be up here in the press box with you.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take the time out here in hour number two of Patriots Playbook, but stick around because the guru, Pro Football Guru's Russell Baxter, will run through week five of the NFL coming up in the Playbook.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo's sacks at Gerard Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds are the 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank.
More than a checking account, Better Banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with Bill Pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call Better Banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
How impressive is that? He's been with us now for at least, what, 7 or 8 years,
I
think,
out of the Playbook. About time I gave him his own intro, right?
Yeah, I think it's about time you had your own intro, Russell. What do you think?
I got a jingle.
You got a tingle from your jingle?
I got a tingle from my jingle.
Nice.
Oh, my goodness.
Nice. ProFootballGuru.com. You've got ColdHardFootballFacts.com. You got Bleacher Report. Russell Baxter joined us here in the Playbook. So, about 5 minutes deep into the third quarter last Sunday, and the Patriots facing a 21-7 deficit. Were you as confident as nobody else seemed to be around here?
I'm sorry, was that the Patriots that played last week or the Celtics?
Yeah, exactly. Coming from behind.
It's becoming old hat when it comes to the Bills, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was that way in both games, as you know, last year.
Yep.
And we even talked about it a little bit last week. The fact is the Patriots had a 21-0 lead at home on Buffalo, lost it. Buffalo had a 21-0 lead at home and lost it. They had a 21-7 lead at home last week and lost it.
Lost it.
Big time.
It's somewhere.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in a galaxy far, far away.
No kidding, huh?
I mean, what a run. 45-7. I mean, it was absolutely astounding to watch. And, people blame a fumble here or a turning point in the game. Listen, everything was going the Bills' way. They had a team that had lost two games in a row. They had won two games in a row. You have this team in your own backyard. You beat them in your own backyard last year. And these are the kind of games, and you know, unfortunately for the Bills, you know, they're 2-2 like New England. But in two games against their own division, they've given up 100 points and have one sack.
Isn't that incredible?
I mean, that is, you know, you have 100 with points and 001 when it comes to getting the quarterback.
Which, and of course, I think most everybody was willing to give Buffalo the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, you've kind of supplanted the Jets as maybe the number two in the division, but they're not even close right now.
Well, when you look at the other three teams in the division, you got a young quarterback in Miami. You know, they're coming off now back-to-back overtime losses, gave up a lead late. You know, they had 8 sacks on Kevin Cobb last week and, you know, held them well over 100 yards rushing, couldn't win the game. The Jets game, I'm sure, has been probed and prodded and talked about all week and will continue to do so up until kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
And here, what's it come down to, John? Here is a Patriots team trying to avoid its first 3-game losing streak in 10 years, and when the afternoon is finished, it pick up a game on the entire division.
Right. Kind of strange.
Well, I mean, but... Well, they won 9 of the last 11 AFC East titles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean it's just when you have the champ down, you know, be it Super Bowl champ or AFC champ or AFC East champ, you got to deliver the knockout punch. You know, the Bills went to an awful lot of trouble in this offseason to rebuild that area, which was the concern.
Right.
Okay, and this was 52 points in your own backyard. Listen, I remember 5 years ago it was a Sunday night, I think, and in Buffalo when Randy Moss and then rung up, what, 56-10?
Mm-hmm.
During the 16-0 season. But much more was expected here. You know, the defensive line looked like it was actually starting to round a little into form. Now, I know they played the Chiefs and the Browns, but it's not who you play, it's how you play.
Right.
And then up 21-7, and then, you know, the bottom just sellout. I don't even know where the bottom went.
Well, it was amazing, really, to see the Patriots continue to run the ball when you're down by two scores. But we now understand why they did, because Buffalo basically dared them to do it with five and six defensive backs back there. So, I mean, if you're going to do that, it's fortunate for the Patriots they were able to still pick up large chunks of yardage and score in relatively short order, because we thought the swing play in the game had to have been the Spikes forcing fumble right before halftime, picked up there by Vince Wilfork. Because it could have been 21-7 at the half.
Right.
And had they gone 28-7 down early in the third quarter, there's no way they would have run the football.
Yeah, that's an, you know, and but you know, I don't know, because I'm one of those people who thinks that that's what happens with teams. These teams that abandon the run, I understand being down 28-7 at the half, if that was the case. And I understand being down 28-7 in the fourth quarter. And you see, you know, used to see it more. Teams, and we used to always, you know, finger Mike March's teams for this, because you would see their rushing line, 6 carries for 7 yards, 7 carries for 9 yards, completely abandon the run. And I think, you know, if you're going to fool team and get some big plays with the play action passing, you're not going to fool anybody if you're not trying to run.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's how you can get back into a game, depending on how much time is left. I'm not talking about running the football when you're down, you know, 2 touchdowns with 3 minutes left. I'm talking about running the football when you're down in the second quarter. And if you abandon your game plan that early, then you are destined to lose.
Right. Well, let's kind of start off then this week with the divisional games, only because we've just been talking a little bit about Buffalo, and they go from ridiculous to the sublime, maybe. They got to go on the road and play at San Francisco on Sunday. And I don't know. I honestly, sometimes when the least is expected of you, you kind of get the most out of your ability.
Yeah, there's doubt it. And the one thing we do know about the Bills is, despite their shortcomings, still apparently on defense,
yep,
they don't have any problems putting points on the board. And when you play the 49ers, the 49ers can sometimes be challenged to get touchdowns. We know they can get field goals. And last week, I know they did a number on the Jets. Of course, one of those touchdowns was by their defense, the Carlos Rogers fumble return of Santonio Holmes after he caught the ball and got hurt and left the ball on the turf. You know, so the Niners do not come out. Remember, the week before at Minnesota, the Niners scored 13 points. They're not an offensive juggernaut, is my point. And sometimes when you can score points, you can make it interesting for a team. Not to score point. Now, obviously, their defenses aren't comparable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, San Francisco, you know, the overall numbers say, but if they're not in the top three teams that we think of as the best defenses in this league right now, then I don't know the game. They're physical. They're deep. You know, that they took out a lot of frustration after losing at Minnesota on the Jets last week. And I agree with you. I think this is going to be an intriguing game, because I think Buffalo will find a way to put some points on the board. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, if you're going to throw 4 touchdowns, for your own sake, please don't throw 4 interceptions.
Yeah, wow.
And, you know, that's been a problem for a while now, the interception bug that has bitten him. And, you know, some people like to go back to his contract. I don't know. Is there ink on the ball? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's necessarily that. I think he got off to a good start. And sometimes I think he just tries to do a little too much. They have a lot of weapons on that team. You know, they're a little banged up at running back, but they, with Fred Jackson, with C.J. Spiller, the tight end Chandler, you know, obviously Stevie Johnson. Their offensive line does a great job of protecting him as well. Remember last year they gave it the fewest sacks in the league, and they're right down there as well this year. They'll get a tall order from that front seven. You know, whoever's going to get charge of blocking Alden Smith, it should be tricky, and I know they're a little banged up on that offensive line as well this week.
The New York Jets are at home. Trouble is, they're at home on Monday night against what a lot of people think is the best team in the NFL right now, in the Houston Texans. How much are the Jets really going to be hurt by losing significant pieces on offense and defense for the season?
Well, it's interesting that you said they are at home, which of course they are. And unfortunately, two of the guys who are at home are Darrell Revis and Santonio Holmes.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You know, arguably their best defensive player. And I don't think it's much of an argument. That's no deference to David Harris and some of the other guys on there. But Darrell Revis is not only probably their best defensive player, but one of the premier overall defensive players in the entire league. And Santonio Holmes, who tied for the team lead last year, even though He missed part of the year last year. He tied for the team lead in touchdown catches with 8. He's their kind of big play presence, and he's gone now for the year as well. So we saw what happened last week. It became a snowball effect. I think they wound up with 145 yards of total offense against the 49ers. They were unable to stop the run. What was 245 yards, I think?
Something like that.
The 49ers had.
Yeah.
And if you think the San Francisco 49ers run with a little determination and consistency, get loaded and ready for the Houston Texans, who come at you with 2 battering rams, and Arian Foster and Ben Tate. Obviously, Andre Johnson, still one of the best in the league. Owen Daniels is leading the team. He catches right now. Terrific tight end. Their offensive line, which we thought might be a problem area because they lost the right side of it to free agency and cuts, so far so good. And defensively, off the charts. You go back to 2010, John, the year before Wade Phillips got there.
Okay.
That team in 16 games gave up 49 offensive touchdowns. They have played 20 regular season games since Wade's arrival. And that same new look unit has given up 31 offensive touchdowns.
Wow.
And of course, the big thing in Houston is not necessarily who, it's Watt.
Yeah.
As in J.J. Watt.
Right.
Who leads the league with 7.5 sacks.
I was just going to say, what in particular do you think that Wade Phillips has brought that he wasn't able to do as a head coach?
Not having to do both jobs.
Yeah, that simple, really.
Big part of it.
Yeah.
And stuff. And I think some guys are just great coordinators and some guys are great head coaches. And, you know, Wade has been a head coach in several spots. We know that. He was head coach in Denver for 2 years, the stint in Buffalo. You know, being a head coach in Dallas has its own set of problems because we know how the power structure works there. And you never really kind of know, just much like we often used to discuss about the Raiders when, you know, the late, great Al Davis was there. You really don't know who's running the show. I mean, I don't know about you, but usually I don't hear from the owner after the game when it comes to a lot of other teams. We seem like we hear from Jerry Jones more than we hear from Jason Garrett.
Right. Okay. We do, don't we?
Yeah.
The other divisional game, certainly got to mention, Dolphins playing at the Cincinnati Bengals. And on Cincinnati, to me, even though I think there was thought there was talent there, it's a little bit of a surprise at 3-1 to get out of the gate. But Miami's got to go on the road here, which would certainly make it much more difficult for them, I would think, at least this weekend. But Andy Dalton's gotten off to a tremendous start.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he's had some interception problems early. The first 2 games of the year, he was actually sacked 10 times. But they're starting to get their act together, and once again, 3-1. Funny enough that they lost their first game by 31 points at Baltimore, and now they've won their last 3 games by a total of 31 points.
31, yeah.
So they're back even when it comes to point differential. And, you know, the Bengals this year are trying to achieve something that they have not done in 30 years, and that's go to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. Their last time they did it, I believe it was the only ever time they did it in their history, was 1981 when they went to Super Bowl 16, and then followed that up in 82 during the strike-shortened season. Back-to-back playoff appearances, we haven't seen it since. But I know this, in the last 20-plus years, when the Bengals get off to a, here's the magic number for them. Whatever their first half record is, if they have a winning first half record, if they're 5-3, 6-2, 7-1, you can almost book it that they'll be in the playoffs because the last 3 times they did that, which was 05, 09, and 2011, they made it to the postseason.
Interesting. Next week's opponent for the Patriots is they get to take the trip out west to play Seattle. And Seattle this week is on the road, and they're playing at Carolina. And Carolina might be one of the bigger disappointments, and maybe even beyond what they put up last week as well, but an underachieving maybe to this point in time Carolina team.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I was one of those people who picked Carolina to win the NFC South as a surprise. I thought none of the teams would, you know, be able to tear themselves away from the other. I thought it was going to be a year where they all kind of beat each other up. And by all rights, Carolina should have closed the deal last week at Atlanta, which would have been huge.
Yeah, should have.
For them to do that. And in fact, I got to give Carolina credit. in one of the odder stats you'll hear, they had played, they had lost four straight to the Falcons and given up 31, 31, 31, and 31 in the four games.
Mm.
So you got to give them credit last week. They did hold the Falcons to 30. Unfortunately, the last three of those came with 5 seconds left. After having Matt Ryan pinned on the one yard line.
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it?
And giving up a, you know, it was weird. That drive began with 59 seconds left. And the first play was a 59-yard pass to Roddy White.
Yep. Yeah, pretty cool. I love how you find the symmetry with everything.
Well, you know, a lot of it comes from I just read. You know, but seriously, you catch things.
Reading is fundamental.
Reading is, oh, that's one of my favorite things. Reading is fundamental, riff.
That's right.
And but it's true. You catch the kind of funny things and oddities when, you know, you're watching the game and you're looking at the play-by-plays and the final scores. And it's funny, those are the little things that, thank goodness, the fans out there and myself really, really enjoy, because they just make for neat, quick. In fact, they should invent something where you can take like a saying and like a, I don't know, maybe 140 characters,
yeah,
and send it out over the internet to people, and they would like follow you. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, John? Are you in?
Sure. Let's. I'll buy stock.
That sounds good.
We'll both get in on that thing. Before I forget about it, tonight's game, Thursday, the Arizona Cardinals at the St. Louis Rams. And so now, you know, hey, you got to think the NFL Network people are loving the fact that the Cardinals are 4-0. But they've got a divisional game here, and you got to go on the road. And these are the games that you have to not only go on the road and play well, but you got to win if you're a legitimate division champion. And I would assume that Arizona's got to be a little antsy to try to prove that they belong right there with, oh, I don't know, say San Francisco.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head. If you're going to win a division like this division is shaping up to be, which we're only 4 weeks in, but nobody in the NFC West has a losing record.
How about that? Right.
Okay?
That's right.
I mean, vilified and punched around for the last couple of years. What was it 2 years ago? You won the West when you were 7-9. That's not happening anymore. Jeff Fisher's done a pretty good job with the Rams, who have really only had one off game so far. I know they're 2-2. The game in Chicago, you know, they got kind of stifled, but
they have won this, both. They have won both of their games at home.
That's exactly right. But how's this for a matchup? Okay, and people might laugh at that because we're talking about special teams. Well, I can't think of anything better. Remember last year, Patrick Peterson tied an NFL record by returning four punts for touchdown in the season.
Right.
He had one each in the game against the Rams.
Hmm.
One that beat them in overtime, and then later in St. Louis, he had one for as well. So Cardinals special teams, Patrick Peterson. But what more can you say about the Rams special teams last week, John? Four field goals. Greg Zuerlein connected on a 58-yarder and a 60-yarder. A rookie, fifth-round pick. And the punter to a touchdown pass to Danny Amendola on a fake field goal.
Loved it.
So there's your offense. There's the Rams special teams against the Cardinals special teams. Who cares about Sam Bradford and Larry Fitzgerald? Just wait till the kickers come on.
I love it. I love it.
That's the game, reason, it's a game for the Rockettes.
Reason enough to watch the game tonight, just to see the special teams come up with something, you know, goofy that might actually have an impact on the game.
Well, you know what's also interesting is, and listen, Atlanta and Houston were both in the playoffs last year, so I don't think anybody's stunned. Maybe a little surprised, but stunned that they're both 4-0. By the way, if Atlanta wins this week, 5-0 for the first time in the history of their franchise.
Really?
Yes. But Arizona used to be, of course, the St. Louis Cardinals. And the last time they were 4-0 is when they were in
St. Louis, right? Yeah, exactly.
Jim Hart, they won the NFC East in 1974.
Yep.
And by the way, maybe they are a little homesick for their old town. You realize the Cardinals have beaten the Rams in St. Louis 7 years in a row.
Wait a second. Say that again. Cardinals have beaten St. Louis in St. Louis 7 years in a row?
Yes. They won their last seven games in St. Louis, the Cardinals.
They've got to be homesick.
There you go.
Gotta be homesick. Tremendous analogy by you. See, that's why we love to. That's why we like to have you in here on Thursdays. You come up with the stuff that it's kind of like makes you go, "Wow," you know. That's cool.
I have that it factor.
You do have the it factor. You mentioned the Falcons, and the Falcons put that 4-0 record on the line against RG3 and the Redskins this week. Call me crazy. Don't call me maybe though. But The Redskins, I kind of like at home in this one.
I don't call you crazy at all. I mean, who's running the ball better than the Redskins right now?
Nobody.
And who's not doing a very good job against the run?
The Falcons.
That's exactly right. I mean, I heard people last week, you know, as I was doing one of my pieces for Bleacher Report, and, you know, I do report cards that come out on Monday morning,
mm-hmm.
and I was pointing out that if you had to take issue with one thing with the Falcons, was their inability to stop the run. And I know they gave up 86 yards rushing to Cam Newton, but they also gave up 113 yards rushing besides Cam Newton. Now, that's a buck 99. And even in their first three games, which they won all of them, they haven't been that stout against the run. You know Mike Shanahan's going to run it with some persistency. I would not be surprised at all if Washington knocked them off. In fact, very intriguing, as we all know how tough it is to go unbeaten in this league.
Sure.
All three 4-0s this week on the road.
All three of them.
Arizona at St. Louis, Atlanta at Washington, Houston at the Jets. And for what it's worth, again, the Jets have never lost to the Houston Texans. They're a perfect 5-0.
Good grief. Now, that I did not know. See, that's a good one, too. Again, Russell Baxter going overtime to bring the numbers.
Well, that would make me the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah,
11-2 in their last 13 games, 5-0 overtime.
It just might. The Philadelphia Eagles had an impressive performance last week. I think we can all realize that. They were able to hold on. They're 3-1. They go on the road and play 1-2 Pittsburgh. And why am I surprised to see Pittsburgh 1-2?
Well, because we're not used to it. And, you know, this is the team that's gotten off to an odd start. You know, last year they got whacked in opening weekend by Baltimore, 35-7, and still rebounded to give up the fewest points in the league for the second straight season. Last time we saw the Steelers, which was 2 weeks ago, they gave up 34 points to the Oakland Raiders, which I'm sure a lot of people were surprised by that. But in Pittsburgh's defense, no pun intended, we really haven't seen the Steelers as we know them as of yet for the most part. James Harrison, we haven't seen at all. Troy Polamalu, we saw opening week. Rashard Mendenhall, we haven't seen at all.
Mm.
So this Steeler team that we've kind of gotten accustomed to going to Super Bowls in recent years, we haven't seen that team yet. And we could see at least two of them, maybe all three of them back this week against the Philadelphia team that I'm now totally convinced will go 13-3, but having a losing point differential.
Wait a second. How is that even possible?
Well, because when you win three games by 4 points and you lose one game by 21.
So you're 3-1 and you've got a losing point differential. Yeah.
Right. I predicted the Eagles would get blown out twice more but win the rest of their games by no more than 3 points.
Oh, my goodness. Don't forget,
Super Bowl champion last year gave up more points than it scored last year.
I know.
I'm just having fun.
Well, I know, but that if that happened, that would be a statistical anomaly to end all.
Oh,
you know.
Would it not? But look at what they've done, 17-16, 24-23, 19-17, and I'm sure Giants fans were curdling last week. Because anytime you have a Giants-Eagles game and you see the score Eagles 19, Giants 17.
Yeah, that kind of...
It kind of brings back a few miraculous memories, if you know where I'm going.
Yeah, I think you want to just kind of crawl into the fetal position and fall on the ball, don't you?
Well, you would hope so.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they didn't do that.
Should we mention what that was?
Well, that, of course, that is the infamous miracle of the Meadowlands.
Yes.
And, you know, Herman Edwards picking at the fumble. Larry Zonka.
Joe Pisarcik.
Everybody talks about Joe Pisarcik. Everybody forgets Larry Zonka as well.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, that play really propelled an Eagles team that was starting to come into its own.
Yeah, yeah.
To the playoffs. They went to the playoffs that year, lost to the Atlanta Falcons. But, you know, that was Dick Vermeil's run when he had them in the playoffs, four straight years,
mm-hmm.
including a Super Bowl appearance in 1980.
Right. Yeah, very well remember that. But then again, I'm also showing my age with that one.
That's all right.
We are
experienced. We are not old.
Yes. That's a good way to put it. I like that. I have experience.
Yeah.
The Chargers playing at the Saints. Chargers are 3-1. The Saints obviously are one of the surprises going the other direction at 0-4 thus far. Although we do know that Sean Payton was given permission to watch or to attend the game this week by the NFL because Drew Brees can set a record for most consecutive games throwing at least one touchdown pass. I don't know that we read anything into this about that particular incident, other than the fact that the Saints, I'm sure, still wish they could get Sean Payton down on the field.
No doubt. And all I'm reading into this game is I think it's going to be a fun game. I think it's going to be a shootout. and it's dripping with ironic history, because here comes San Diego, 3-1. Very impressive win, by the way, last week at Kansas City. At least they were up 17-0 before the Star Spangled Banner, I think, was even finished. But more impressively, here comes Drew Brees with a chance to set one of the most fabled records in the history of the league. There's no doubt about that. Now tied with Johnny Unitas, unfortunately doing it for an 0-4 football team the last four games of this streak. But think about this. It was San Diego where he began his career.
Yeah, that's true.
And now he goes against Philip Rivers for, you know, the organization basically, you know, they drafted Drew Brees. You know, it's funny, Drew Brees, in all right, sort of, kind of, should have been a first-round pick, because he was drafted with the 32nd pick in 2001, John, the
right.
First pick in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
A year later, all of a sudden we had
32
in the
right.
First round because Houston joined the league.
Mm-hmm.
So Drew Brees comes in. He's the quarterback for a couple of years, basically. In comes Philip Rivers. Drew Brees is still kind of the quarterback. They opt to go with the future in Philip Rivers. You know, the Brees with the shoulder injury winds up in New Orleans, taking them to the playoffs four times in 6 years, won a Super Bowl, and now he returns to face them. And by the way, the last time these two teams played, they played in London. It was a big shootout between Rivers and Brees. I think it was 37-32 New Orleans. But anyway, I bring up the Charger aspect for one incredibly ironic reason. Well, maybe two. You know, there's only ever been one team to rebound from the an 0-4 start, John, to reach the NFL postseason. And that was the San Diego Chargers 20 years ago. The 1992 Chargers went 0-4 and then won the AFC West. So can Drew Brees and company get hot at the right time and do that? I don't know. But even more ironic is the matter of the iconic Johnny Unitas, who we were just talking about breaking his record.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he did that with the Baltimore Colts from 1956 to 60. It was spanned over 5 years, obviously, because they didn't play as many games.
Right.
But does anybody remember where Johnny Unitas ended his career?
San Diego.
Yes, the same place where Drew Brees started his.
Yep. Love the symmetry. Love the symmetry. It's good stuff. All right, that's going to bring us full circle then. By the way, before we get to the Broncos-Patriots game, question I asked of our listeners yesterday, I wanted to ask you. Pick your top five quarterbacks in the league right now, week 5, 2012. Who are the five guys right now that are playing the best of anybody?
Oh, God, you said five guys. And
five.
I want a hamburger.
Yeah, I know, me too. I love that place. We have one here at Patriot Place, by the way.
There you go. I'm on my way.
Okay.
Well, obviously Tom Brady.
Yep.
And obviously Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
And I still think Drew Brees, even though he's had a little bit of interceptions, bugs. You know, Matt Ryan just got named the NFC Offensive Player of the Month. And I'm him and Joe Flacco, it's funny. They're both in their fifth year, and they're both doing new things this year. So I'm kind of reserving judgment. I still put Ben Roethlisberger there.
Okay.
They're kind of off to a sluggish start, but, you know, not necessarily because of him. And fifth, you know, I think you might have to start giving Matt Schaub a little more credit. I know he's been to Pro Bowls, but, you know, he comes off an injury year. I mean, a year where his season was cut short by injury. I wasn't sure if he was going to stumble a little out of the gate or at least take him a little time to get started. I obviously have not mentioned Peyton Manning.
Or Eli.
Excuse me?
Or Eli.
Or Eli. Okay, that's true. All right. But Peyton comes off a very unusual situation, and I have to see more. Okay, I do think he is throwing the ball better the last 2 weeks opposed to the first 2 weeks. But it's just, I mean, any other standard year, you ask me this question, and Peyton might be the first name that I mention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now Eli, I know this sounds odd. I have to see Eli maybe do it a couple years in a row. Everybody likes to make a big deal, and rightfully so, of his 8-3 postseason record. And I think they do that more to shove it in his brother's face, to be bluntly honest with you. But I also know Eli's postseason record is a 4-0 postseason in 2007 and a 4-0 postseason in 2011 and 3-3 and outs. If that's what you want to judge quarterbacks by, championships to me are won by teams. They're not won by quarterbacks. And I find it odd that just 1 year before he won this last Super Bowl, I didn't hear all the quote-unquote elite talk about a quarterback who had turned over the ball 30 times in 1 year. Okay, so all I'm saying is, you know, we have a habit of crowning too early, and we also have a habit of dismissing too early. I'm big on consistency and seeing a long run. I have now seen Aaron Rodgers pretty much do this for 3 or 4 years. Tom Brady has done it seemingly forever. Drew Brees as well. Ben Roethlisberger, I think his record speaks for itself. He doesn't put up the gaudy numbers, okay? Mm-hmm. But he's about as resourceful as a quarterback as you're going to see. But if you're asking me right now who's playing the best maybe of the five, I don't know if Eli Manning is necessarily playing best. I know he had one heck of a quarter against the Buccaneers.
Mm-hmm.
I also know he threw 3 picks earlier in that game as well.
Yeah.
So you don't see necessarily the consistency yet. Now, I will also say in Eli's defense, they have also severely gotten away from the run in New York. So they're asking him to do a lot of the things that his brother was asked to do.
Right.
And eventually I think that comes back and bites you in the Manning.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good. All right, so let's get to the Patriots and the Broncos on Sunday. We've got the late Sunday afternoon game at 4:25 Eastern Time, the kickoff, and both teams are 2-2 coming in. The Patriots are coming off of a 45-point second half at Buffalo. The Broncos are coming off of a blowout win against Oakland, a divisional rival. It looks like Peyton Manning is beginning to look a little bit more like the Peyton Manning we were used to seeing, and maybe everybody was used to seeing in Indianapolis. They're catching up to him. He's catching up to them. Question is, can they catch up to the Patriots in Foxborough?
Well, keeping pace with them, as you know, is tough. And we saw with Tom Brady, you know, so much is going to be focused on with Peyton and Tom Brady, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But the number 86 sticks in my mind. And that would be the number of points that the Patriots put on the Broncos in 2 games last year.
Right.
41-23, 45-10. Tom Brady, what, 5 first-half touchdown passes in the playoff game?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know Tim Tebow and the offense was partly responsible for that because they couldn't maintain any drives. But I did not see Denver's defense putting up much resistance in either game. And the first game was in Denver. Okay? So even though the Patriots' defense didn't play – remember, Denver ran roughshod on them in the first quarter and a half in that game. On the ground, and then it suddenly got. And you see, that's what you see with the Patriots recently is they can go on these runs, they can go on these spurts. You feel confident about what's going on, and then all it takes is one little play for things to fall apart, and the Patriots pounce on you like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's more the matchup. I can see another 300-yard day by Peyton Manning. I could see them scoring 21 points, but unless Denver is going to do something different defensively. And they did in both meetings last year. I mean, to me, I still think it goes the Patriots' way. I don't know what the final score will be necessarily. And maybe it won't be a high-scoring game. But I'm not confident that the Denver defense has progressed as much as people think.
Well, I think that's the intriguing factor about this game because with a different coordinator, you're kind of thinking, well, that, you know, maybe there's a wrinkle here, even though the personnel is largely still the same. I wonder if they might try something a little bit different. That's the X factor that nobody really knows yet.
Yeah, listen, do I think the Patriots have a cornerback who can necessarily shut down Demaryius Thomas? I'm not sure about that. Okay, but I'm not sure who's covering Rob Gronkowski or Wes Welker or Brandon Lloyd when it comes to Denver. I know Champ Bailey is out there. I know they made some good additions. To me, if Von Miller and Elvis Dumervil don't get to Tom Brady, and I'm not saying they can't, if they don't, I think Denver could be in for a long, because that playoff game last year in that first half, that's something hard to get out of your mind. And I'm sure the Denver defense has that burned in their helmets.
Yeah.
From last year. I mean, that was over quickly. And again, everybody wants to focus on Tebow versus Brady or Peyton versus Brady. When it really comes down to it, it's the quarterback versus the defense. And the Denver Broncos had no defense when they played against Tom Brady last year.
They definitely didn't. And like I said, this is really, to me, the key to this game is to whether or not, you know, Denver's defense can figure out a way to force Brady into some early calls. Conversely, that's what the Patriots defense has to do with Peyton Manning. If he's getting closer to the Peyton Manning that, you know, we all used to, you know and hate, or let's just say respected from afar when he was with the Colts, the key to beating him, you're not going to outsmart him.
No.
But what you can do is put enough pressure on him to make early decisions so that the timing doesn't sync up with his receivers. And I really think that's the key. Whose defense is going to be able to cause a little bit of, shall we say, consternation amongst the two star quarterbacks?
Listen, there's not anything that Bill Belichick is going to throw at Peyton Manning, and this is all in due respect to Bill Belichick. But, you know, Peyton Manning, in some ways, even though he's gotten the best of him in, you know, the playoffs, you know, two out of three times, but one thing Peyton Manning has done with him consistently, and this goes even back, John, to Bill's days with the Jets in 1998, the year the Jets almost got to the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning has had this knack of erasing big deficits against Bill Belichick defenses.
Mm-hmm.
He did it as a rookie in 1998 when the Jets lost the game at Indianapolis during Manning's rookie season. It was the last game they lost that year until the AFC Championship game. Go back to 2003, 31-10 New England, suddenly 31-31. Now, the Patriots won the game, but I'm sure that Bill Belichick and the Patriots staff will always remember that.
Sure.
The 06 AFC Championship game. Still the largest comeback ever in a championship game, 21-3.
Yep.
And then who's going to forget? 4th-and-2. Everybody talks about 4th-and-2 in that game in 2009. What people forget was the score was 31-14 New England.
Right.
And they wound up losing the game. So I just named four comebacks, pardon me, of double digits that Peyton Manning has orchestrated against Bill Belichick teams or defenses. I'm sure he's a lot smarter than I am, and I'm sure he remembers every one of those games.
Gee, thank you for just dredging those up and letting us all remember them with you.
I'm big into dredging. In fact, I think I'm going to go make some chicken tenders, as a matter of fact.
sounds really good. Russell, great to speak with you, as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
And you have a great weekend, John.
Thank you. Same to you. I know you will.
Okay.
All right. Russell Baxter, who, of course, ProFootballGuru.com, Bleacher Report, Cold Hard Football Facts. Guy gets it done, doesn't he? How about that? That's one thing that we really hadn't talked much about this week, but the fact remains is that four double-digit comebacks by Peyton Manning against Bill Belichick. Double digit comebacks.
Cut that meat.
Sandwich.
Cut that meat.
Thank you, Peyton. So if the Patriots get themselves, shall we say, an early lead, I dare I say, it ain't over till it's over this Sunday. All right, let me get a couple of emails in here, and then we'll get back to the phones as well. This one comes from Brian. Or actually, I should say it's Mally in Nebraska, he says. I think all of the analysis I've heard has been pretty spot on. I think that Peyton Manning isn't going to hang a big day for Spikes and Cunningham as they double and triple team Wilfork. So he goes 38-21 Pats. I think it's close until the fourth. And then he says, I love this, one of my great philosophical sayings here. He says, in just 3 days, the day after tomorrow will be yesterday. Who comes up with this stuff? All right, here we go. Juve says, I feel confident. Something tells me that we keep rolling from last Sunday. Pats 41, Broncos 24. I really enjoy listening to you guys. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Juve. Appreciate that. Right, let's go back to the phones as well. Eldridge in North Carolina. Hey, Eldridge, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing, man? How you doing, John?
Good, good, good. What's on your mind today?
I'm feeling good about the game, too, but I keep wondering if Gronk and Hernandez is out, right?
Well, we don't know for sure because Hernandez did come back to practice today.
A full day?
Yes.
The force that I'm hearing that he's, you know, up in air, and Gronkowski going to play, but his hip, in other words, he's not 100%.
Well, Gronk was back. Hernandez was back. I think the best guess is that while the hip is certainly bothersome, I think Gronk's going to play. I'd still be surprised to see Hernandez play.
Yeah, me too. So I'm wondering, besides the running game, what offense don't come from? Because I know Welcher, he had a good game against Buffalo last week, but this is Denver. the linebackers are faster, and the Lions are better than Buffalo. And they got a secondary. You know, even though we whooped them in the playoffs, yeah, that was in the playoffs, but that was a year ago. And like you said earlier, that's going to be burning that defense's mind by what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, line ain't the same as it was last year either. Because Dan Copeland's playing on that side of the ball against us this time. So I'm just wondering where the offense going to come from. Because, Lord, they lived up to his expectation yet. You know what I mean? And I think the reason is he's not the feature guy. Because when he was with Denver, he was the feature guy. He showed out. And we were the Rams, the feature guy. He showed out. But right now, he just playing like one in the pack to me. What do you think?
Well, I think he's more than just one in the pack. But, you know, the Patriots showed me something last week that clearly we didn't feel like they had. And that was the ability to, you know, run between the tackles as well as being able to run around in. And so they've got two or three different guys that can kind of do that. And I think when they need to run the ball, they have shown to me, at least to this point in time, that they can be effective. Now, I think, you know, there's something to be said for your comment about Buffalo's defensive line. Maybe they're a little overrated, although I think you'd have to say that they certainly you got to admit they made a lot of news in the offseason when they brought it in. So was everybody wrong about Buffalo? I don't know. I don't know that we're far enough into the season. We're at the quarter pole here. I don't know that we're far enough into the season to be able to make a definitive comment one or the other. That probably can also be held true for the Patriots running game. But you have a running game that maybe you didn't think you had. You certainly have a wide receiver that gains a lot of respect in Brandon Lloyd and the fact that obviously Denver knows him well. You got a tight end that Denver could not keep up with in two games last year. And you have Welker on top of that, who's, you know, liable to, you know, torch just about anybody underneath. You almost have to spy on him, and if you do, you're still going to leave yourself susceptible somewhere. And this is where Bill Belichick and now Josh McDaniels, this is where they have excelled in the past in being able to identify the weaknesses in the opposing defense and take advantage of said weakness. And I just think the Patriots still have too many weapons. I agree with you that Denver's got some talent, and they got key guys at key positions on the field. I just don't know that they have enough all the way around to be able to keep up in a track meet.
Okay. But, like the last caller said, I don't know if we got anybody that can keep up with Demaryius Thomas either in the backfield, I mean, in the secondary. Because Arrington sure can't. He's too slow with fast receivers. He doesn't do good with them. McCourty does. I give him a C for every now and then. He'll show up against fast, bigger and fast receivers. But Moore, first year he played, he was good. This year, I don't know what happened to Moore. I don't know what happened. I don't know if he's studying too hard or trying not to make too many mistakes, or he's not playing like he did last year. What do you think?
Well, first of all, about Demaryius Thomas, you know, I think that while Arrington's going to see some time, I also think McCourty has got to, you know, see some time as well. That might be a situation where you flip a little bit and give the guy different looks. There's no question he's got great individual talent. And one-on-one, he's a potential nightmare and a potential mistake for the Patriots waiting to happen. What I'm hoping here, though, is that Patriots can provide at least sufficient of, you know, help, you know, over the top with the safety. What that also means, though, is that recognized by Peyton Manning in order to find a guy like Jacob Tammy over the middle. And we saw what happened with Donald Jones last week where the Bills, you know, gutted him up the middle, you know, against a soft defense, and Buffalo was able to take advantage of that early in the second half last week. And that will be something that you'd think that Peyton Manning could take advantage of if that situation presents itself. I will be interested to see how the Patriots decide to defend their receivers, because there's a lot of respect, I know, for Decker and also for Stokely, and you know that Stokely and Manning have a thing for their time in Indy in the past anyway. That's what worries me more than anything. Not so much Thomas, but Tammy and Stokely, you know, kind of nickel and dime the Patriots.
So do you think Gregory, the safety to be back there, is better than Wilson?
I don't. I actually think Tavon Wilson will I think he may move into the starting role before the year is out. Just my own thoughts. I think the kid's got a lot of talent. I like Steve Gregory, but I think Wilson has the ability to make plays. And what the Patriots are going to need on defense, Eldridge, are playmakers, people that can step up, make plays, stop drives. I think Wilson's got the potential to do that.
I do, too. Thanks, John.
All right, Eldridge. Yeah, you betcha. Thank you. All right, so that's Eldred in North Carolina. Now let's get to some emails and to some other posts. Predictions for the game here in the last couple of moments at webradio at patriots.com. First of all, Frank says on Facebook, 45-13 Patriots. Good grief. Tom evenly distributes the ball with a two-touchdown day for Ridley. Defense plays strong. Only one deep ball for Manning for a touchdown. Other than that, they never see the red zone. Woo! Woohoo! Okay. Let me see what else I got here. That's a 45-13. Really? Okay. So let's find out. What's wrong with the studio? Does it smell in here? Oh, come on. Come on. That was not me. I will not claim that. Marco says, Marco from Mexico, Redbone fan, I think this is a great test for our defense to show the improvements. But against Manning, it'll be difficult to look as a very solid unit, especially in the middle, which against the Bills didn't look good at all, just like we just mentioned. All right, Marco. So he says it'll be a great and entertaining game. I see myself nervous as hell while watching. He says his score, 34-28, Patriots win. Look for Gronk to blast the Broncos again. All right, Marco, thank you much. Guys, that stuff that you sprayed is worse. It has to be worse than what Matt just did.
It's sour apple. It's delicious.
Better than what I'm tasting in here, Rook. I'll tell you that much.
Man. What happened to the tangerine orange that we had?
I tried to fend it off from that doorway so it didn't penetrate through the door.
God.
The paint's peeling off the walls.
Don't you just wish that we had smell-o-vision or smell-o-radio? See, that would be appropriate right now.
I hope not. I mean,
scratch your computer screen and sniff it.
People be passing out left and right.
That's true, because before me, it's Andy and Fred, and that'd be
toxic fumes.
That'd be tough. Justin says, guys, do you think with the forecast calling for raw weather and rain, the crowd will be less into it? I know we aren't exactly the loudest bunch, and I'm thinking this won't help. You know, I disagree with you there, Justin, to be honest. Our crowd is always into it, but this has been a subject of debate, not only here on this program, but elsewhere, over the last several years since Gillette was built in 01 and we started out then. But fact is that the way the stadium is structured, it just doesn't hold sound in. It doesn't reverberate because we've got a lot of open space. You know, we've got the lighthouse and the bridge on one end, and then you've got an open end where the banners are on the other that is really not closed in. The stadiums that have the closed entries and that are more bowl-shaped than anything else, those are the ones that generate the loudest noise. And this stadium seats as many as a lot of others. There's 68,000-plus in here on a game day. But the problem is the sound just goes up and through the holes in the stadium. And so our fans get criticized for not being terribly loud, and I really don't find that to be the case. I think that we're loud, but the problem is sustaining the noise because there's just no reverberating effect from the stands or from the closed-in areas that you find in other stadiums. So, while I know that our fans in the past have gotten somewhat complacent, I'm not necessarily letting them off the hook here. The fans have gotten complacent, and I think it's the party crowd, if you will, the club crowd sits in the red seats and doesn't even come out. You know, when the weather gets cold, they stay in the clubhouses, and wine and dine themselves and watch football. You know, the Hardy fans are probably down or probably in the upper deck between the 20-yard lines, to be honest with you. Then in the end zone, I don't want to leave the end zone out either, because I think the end zone fans are the ones that really get rowdy, and I think those are the ones that are good, solid, raw Patriots fans, which we really like to see. I don't think it has anything to do with our noise. I think we do a good job with noise. It's just you're kind of up against it with the way the stadium is structured. The raw weather, frankly, I think tends to bring out a lot of the energy, not conversely. I've been doing this myself here for 20 years. I've seen it in the old stadium, and now I've seen it for a decade here in the new stadium. And the fact of the matter is that bad weather tends to bring out some of the nastiness in New England fans. We revel in the bad weather. And even if it's cold, if it's snowy, if it's rainy, we like it. We like to heap misery on the opponent, and we drive them into the ground until, you know, they've had enough. And I frankly think raw weather and rain, which is the forecast again for Sunday a bit, I think that actually plays into our favor. Josh in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm mailing in with my prediction. I agree that the Pats will come away with a win, but I disagree with the point differences. I know the Broncos scheme has changed quite a bit, but has kept a lot of the same personnel. It being a lot of the same personnel, I can tell you that these guys remember the whooping they got last year and how much it stung. Most of them didn't even look like they wanted to be on the field anymore. That being the case, I think they're going to play their butts off and bring the game in close to 38-34. As always, love the show. Go Pats. All right, so 38-34 Pats on that one. He says the Broncos are going to make it close, just like our friend Eric Scalavino says. Yusuf says, I think Devin McCourty is capable of performing in the manner in which he did versus the Bills. I just think he needs to develop amnesia. So that in the event things go wrong early for him, he won't allow one play to snowball into more. That's, I think, very key with any young player, Yusuf. He also says, I think the opposite is true for him in that sense, but in a positive way. I don't recall hearing much from Stevie Johnson on Sunday because things got off to a good start. If he can develop football amnesia, I have great hopes for him. Step in the right direction. I'd give you on that one as well. Football amnesia is always good. In fact, you could say that for a lot of positions. You're only as good as your last play, and if your last play stunk, well, then you got to make your next play the best one. You got to forget the last play, and you got to move on. That's what makes a great player. That's what makes at least a consistent player, but that's what makes a player that has a shelf life in the NFL, the ability to have, as you said, Yusuf, amnesia. It's a good point. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Playbook. We want you to stick around, however, because Football Nation with Bill and Todd is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio. My thoughts again on the game, 27-20. The Pats over the Broncos. I think it'll be a little less higher scoring than some are thinking. Just a hunch. Maybe nothing more than that, but I think the Patriots, I do think it will be close. I think the Patriots will get a challenge. There's no doubt in my mind. If they shoot themselves in the foot, Denver behind Peyton Manning is eminently capable of pulling it off. We saw that with Arizona. It could happen. The Patriots got to play their game. By the way, just as an aside here, for those of you that like to listen to football and be a part of it as well, if you've followed on Facebook or Twitter at all this week with me, I'm getting ready to get started on a new adventure. I've been hired by the NBC Sports Radio Network to do some show work for them, and I make my debut on the new radio network tomorrow night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. In for Eric Casilius tomorrow night, and you can listen to the broadcast. First of all, go to NBCSportsRadio.com, and you'll see a listing of all the radio affiliates around the country, of which there are many. And if by some chance it's not in your area, you can listen to the program live online, streamed for free. Again, it's NBCSportsRadio.com. Don't normally like to steer you from Patriots.com, but in the interest tomorrow night, we're going to be talking a lot of football. I know Peter King is going to be around, Doug Flutie is going to be around, and Rodney Harrison will be around tomorrow night, so that might have some interest for many of you. And so given the opportunity to contribute to the show tomorrow night, I would love to hear from you. And yes, say, hey, love you in the Patriots playbook, or whatever you want to say. Hey, you're an idiot. I heard you on the Patriots playbook. It doesn't matter. Just mention that. We can talk about that tomorrow night because we will be talking some serious football from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time Friday night, NBCSportsRadio.com. So there you go. Just to, I have to give myself a little right there. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks to Russell Baxter, and thanks to Lindsey Jones from the Denver Post, and, of course, to Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. Pats Broncos here Sunday. And then we talk about it next week as well on Nitpick Tuesday. Bill and Todd, Football Nation, is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.